What a country, now you'll see it. Take the train and just lean back, 'cause you'll get to go from downtown right to downtown when you go Amtrak.
The glory days of passenger rail travel may not be over. Amtrak is expecting another record-breaking year. Last year, a record high number of passengers, nearly 26 million of them, rode on the rails on Amtrak trains. And the National Railroad Passenger Corporation expects to beat that number handily this year. So is it the ease of going from downtown to downtown, as the commercial says? Well, actually, I'm guessing it probably has a lot to do with high gas prices. A happy, fun travel experience? What's it really like to ride the rails on Amtrak? Ben Jervey tried it out. He's a contributing writer to Good Magazine. Hi, Ben.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
As a journalist, what did you hope to find out on this trip? What were you looking to discover?
I was trying to figure out what is the condition of American passenger rail. I work a lot in the sustainability field and report a lot about environmental and sustainability issues, and I personally see trains as being a very essential solution, a transportation solution for, you know, our new 21st mm-hmm. century and a new energy economy. But nobody ever considers taking the train. Certainly none of my friends do. And you know, most of the people I talk to, mm-hmm. it's considered a novelty. And I just really wanted to figure out why, what's wrong with it, what's broken, look into the history a little bit, and try to get an idea of how things could be better moving forward.
Tell people about your trip, where you went, from where to where, how many miles, and how long it took. Let's get the basics out.
I started this trip right here in New York City at Penn Station, and the ultimate destination was Oakland, California, the Bay Area. The train doesn't actually get quite into San Francisco. You end in Oakland to take a bus across. It's a over 3,000-mile trip. It's if the trains make their schedule, it takes about 77 hours. It travels along two long-established rail routes. The first is the Lakeshore Limited from New York City to Chicago. Mm-hmm. Then you exchange to the California Zephyr. And I love these romantic rail route names. The Zephyr goes from Chicago all the way out to Oakland.
You brought up a lot of interesting points. Let me unroll them a little bit. You said 77 hours and 15 minutes if on time. I love the train. It's rarely on time.
It's true. It's the biggest complaint and most common thing you'll hear from regular Amtrak travelers is that it's it never makes its marks. And it especially so when you get out of the Northeast corridor. There are some more dependable routes up here in the Northeast. Amtrak owns some of the more tracks that they travel on here in the Northeast. But once you get out west and along some of these old freight lines, these freight privately owned rail lines that Amtrak is forced to travel on, they're sort of beholden to the private companies' schedules, and it really slows down the process.
Were you frustrated at all during this trip? I mean, it's a long time to spend on a train, even for a journalistic endeavor.
Well, I'll tell you, it's comfortable. I like the train. I think it's a great way to travel. I think but you need to have the time. It's not that practical if you're traveling long distance unless you sort of integrate it into the part of the journey. If the journey becomes part of the experience, part of the trip. I was getting a little stir crazy towards the end, to be sure. The last day or so from Salt Lake City onward to California was drew out long a little bit.
We're talking to Ben Jervey, a contributing writer to Good Magazine. Ben spent well over 77 hours on trains going from the East Coast to the West Coast. You said there are four different kinds of travelers on the trains these days. What are the groups?
There are the thrifty, the folks traveling these sort of medium distance intercity routes that for really sort of marginal cost savings, maybe 50, 75 bucks cheaper than it would be to fly. Mm-hmm. There are those who are afraid of flying. And I was actually surprised to see how many there were. If you are looking to find a collection of people who are afraid of airplanes, this is the place. There are an incredible group of people that absolutely fascinated me that describe themselves sort of alternately as railroad junkies, train nuts, or rail fans, which is mm-hmm. sort of their lingo. And these are just passionate, really rail aficionados. They can tell you the history of the rail. You sit down for a beer with one of them and you're talking for hours about the history of trains. Really interesting. The majority of people who take the train, I found, were really there for the experience. These are the people who are considering, you know, this trip to be part of their vacation. They're building it in. The rail experience of traveling, seeing America mm-hmm. from the train, it really does have this romantic, connotation for a lot of people. And I think that... Amtrak, greatly benefits for that.
Well, let's look into the history. Amtrak is somewhat of a boondoggle.
Precisely. It was basically formed out of the dregs of the failed portions of private freight mm-hmm. rail companies. They were offering passenger rail service through the 60s. It got... they lost all their profits in that. People started flying, people started driving, and it was very costly and cutting into their profits. And in order to save the rail companies, to keep them moving the freight that powered the economy, President Nixon's administration basically said, we will take on all of your passenger rail. These unprofitable mm-hmm. segments of these businesses, and it was formed as a quasi-public for-profit corporation that had a history of never turning profit. So it was kind of it was kind of cursed from birth.
When we're looking forward, we've obviously with stories about bridge collapses and the like. How is the infrastructure from your reporting? How is the infrastructure of the rail system? Is that part of the problem of why it's late all the time and
it's
why
old.
People don't think about it? It's just old.
It's old. It's the same as it has been for years. We haven't laid new train tracks, real high-speed tracks. In Europe, mm-hmm. they run on these maglev or electric tracks. And they just tested a train in France at 350 miles per hour. They run regularly at 250 miles per hour throughout Europe mm-hmm. and in Japan. Our really sterling example here in the States is the Acela, and it runs for...
That's the sterling example?
And it runs for 150 miles per hour for a 15-minute span
exactly.
in Connecticut. So it's really, to call it high speed is a stretch even.
What kind of investment would need to be made to help rail service reach the goals that you have for it
right.
in terms of being better for our future, for our environment, just plainly being a nicer way to go?
Right. I'm no transportation expert, but I feel like a short-term investment in Amtrak is a good idea because Americans are finding it now, and they need to remember the rail as mm-hmm. a viable form of transportation. So increasing service and trying to increase reliability in the short term. But with this system that they have now, it's never going to get to that next level where people are really – where it's really going to be the answer. And I think it would take – I think it would require a public investment on new tracks, new lanes, mm-hmm. new routes, real high speed tracks in these high density corridors that these 500 mile or less corridors that could really move a lot of people and relieve the airline traffic and interstate traffic.
Ben Jervy is a contributing writer to Good Magazine. Thanks for sharing your rail stories with us, Ben.
Oh, thanks for listening.
The Kubler-Ross model. You know what it is? About 40 years ago, Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, she introduced the five stages known as the five stages of grief. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Obviously, we're in the last week of this fine program, and we've been working our way through the five, as many of our people in our audience have. Monday, we talked about denial. Yesterday, it was anger. Today, we're going to discuss bargaining. And, of course, we had to bargain with each other for what song to play. There's been a big debate in the BPP newsroom in terms of the best song to play to express this. Is it this?
If you change your mind, take a chance on the first in line. Take a chance, honey, I'm still free. Take a chance on me. If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got no place to go when you're feeling down.
Or should the best song in the world today to express bargaining be this?
I want you, want me.
ABBA versus Cheap Trick. The debate is on, coming up on the Bryant Park Project. Also coming up on the rest of the show, we'll talk a little bit to the band Dr. Dog. They come out of Philadelphia. And we'll also discuss the possibility of an Oscar for Heath Ledger for his role as a Joker in The Dark Knight. Tom O'Neill from the LA Times will join us. He's actually going to be in the studio. I can see him through the window right there. Real life. You are real. You do exist. Yes. Stay with us here at the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.